and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. It's estimated that in the upcoming general election, young voters, categorized as those under the age of 40, will make up some 55% of the electoral roll. And under half of this figure, some 6 million new voters will be between the ages of 18 to 21. Now, some political watchers are saying that young voters will be the kingmakers of GE15. But will the youth vote prove to be a force to be reckoned with? My first guest tonight is James Chai. He's a visiting fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. James, just a couple of months ago, you had written a piece titled "Not All Youth Votes Are Equal," and you were referring to how in different constituencies, the youth vote carries different weight. Can we begin our conversation there tonight? Share a little bit about where you found youth votes to be the most consequential and what were some of the commonalities within those constituencies?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me. So what was commonly claimed was that there is a huge volume impact that was brought by only 18. So the sheer size of the youth voters that we bring into the electoral roll will have a substantial impact to how elections are decided, right? So that's the basic logic. However, I think because we had a lot of historical baggages when it comes to our electoral system, so what that means is that there is huge inequality between the seats. So you would have one seat that is like a few hundred thousand voters and the other seat that's only like 30,000 voters. So obviously the smaller seat would have substantially more value in changing the outcome compared to a larger seat, right? So what I did was that I knew that a lot of the new youth voters that we put into the system are largely urban based. So it means that not all youth votes have the equal value that they perceive in the next general election. So what I did was I took all of the youth votes of every seat, and then I compared it to the majority of that seat and to see how many percent of youth votes do I need to overthrow the incumbent in that seat. And the smaller the percentage you require from youth votes to actually overthrow, the more powerful it is, right? So what I realized was that the top 10 seats that are most powerful are largely based in semi-rural or rural seats that are primarily in Sabah, so as well as some parts of Semenanjung. So you have seats in Sabah like Keningau, Libaran, Papar, or places like Kuala Pilah, as well as Jelebu in Semenanjung. The common characteristic of all of this is that they have they're deprived seats. In other words, they have very poor access to pipe water. Their poverty levels and unemployment levels are above the average median level. Very, very poor public service, which means that access to clinics, hospitals, police are very, very poor. So in a way, that is a good thing because it means that people who are most deprived would have who are also most powerful in deciding the outcome of an election to hopefully elevate their position.
Right. Okay. So rural, semi-rural, in those constituencies, young voters have the most power to alter the outcome of an election. Can I ask you then, on the flip side, as you mentioned, the least youth-sensitive votes, if we were to do a comparison, you mentioned are in cities, I'm guessing KL, Selangor, Penang. How do you think this might influence the campaigning, the strategy of political parties if they were to respond to these trends?
Yeah. So I think that's a very good point, because on the side that we've mentioned just now, which are on people who are from deprived seats, the good thing about only 18 is that it returned a lot of power to these people, because essentially what politicians are going to do is that they're going to focus on smaller seats like that. In other words, it makes more sense for me as a politician to campaign for a youth vote in Keningau would actually, because that vote would actually change the outcome and allow me to win that seat, compared to campaigning in Sebute, which, you know, even if I get 2-3 times more youth votes in that seat, it wouldn't be enough to change the majority. And I'll just let Teresa Kok win that seat anyway, right? So a lot of the incentive structure of politicians are dictated by that. And a lot of research have also shown that whether or not a group of voters were canvassed, which means that whether there were volunteers from political parties to actually knock on their doors to tell them to get out to vote during election day, makes a huge difference to whether they turn out to vote or not, right? So you could imagine something like that happening for a few elections to come. A lot of the youth voters in urban areas, in Kuala Lumpur, Penang, and Selangor, would no longer bother to vote because they never had much attention paid to them in the very first place. And because voting is primarily a habit-forming activity, if you do not do it for the first few times when you had the opportunity to do it, subsequently, you may actually just go out of that system and start being a non-voter.
Right. Well, we don't have a lot of, historical data to work on this being what pundits are calling the first youth election. But James, what do we know so far about young voters' behavior?
So the traditional assumption was that when it comes to who they prefer as a sort of like their political choice, we always assume that the younger generation now are more progressive, more liberal, more open-minded than their parents' generation. But I think what is more likely to be true is that the generation now are probably way more polarized than the previous generation, which means that there will be a group of people who are much more progressive than their parents, but there's also an opposite group that are much more conservative than their parents, right? So I think early signs of the research are showing this in place. But we don't know for sure, right? Like you've mentioned just now, we only have very imperfect proxies as to where youth votes are going to go. You could look into MUDA membership to see whether that's a good enough proxy. You could look into the previous Johor election to see whether that's good enough. But I think overall, that this is not enough data for us to tell where they would go. And that's why my next research that's coming up in 1 or 2 weeks is supposed to actually give us some findings directionally as to where, not necessarily who they would vote for, but what are their preferences when it comes to voting? What do they care for the most? What will motivate them to get out the door to actually turn up to the polling booth on that day?
Right. Well, it looks like we'll be checking in with you when that research comes out. James, thank you so much for speaking with me tonight. James Chai, Visiting Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. A quick break here and Consider This. We'll be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Joining me now is Carmen Low. She's the co-founder of Youth in Politics, which is an independent youth-led movement that aims to generate more politically aware Malaysian youth. Carmen, thanks for joining me on the show. I've heard Malaysian youth being described as politically apathetic, or, you know, studies that show that they are less likely to join political parties, to follow political news, or to engage in political discussions when compared to, say, the older generation. Do you think there's a gulf between youth who are politically conscious and engaged and organized with compared to youth of, say, the masses? Are the politically conscious in the minority?
I think so there are definitely politically conscious youth in the minority, but I don't think there are as many as compared to the majority group. And I think this is mainly due to the fact that the political awareness programs organized by various organizations are all centered around urban areas and not really the rural areas. So the minds of the youths from rural areas are still plagued by the race and religion-based politics, and some of them even refuse to participate in political discourses due to the amount of time spent worrying about things that matter more to them. So say things like raising up their siblings and helping out their parents to make ends meet. Unlike the urban areas, they do not have access to internet or their connection might not be as good. So they won't be able to obtain political information through social media pages. So these young voters might fall into the trap of electing individuals who their parents ask them to vote for.
Right. Do you think that the apathy or the lack or the disengagement by certain groups of youth, particularly in rural areas, do you think that that might translate into lower voter turnout among the youth voters in the next general elections?
I think so. If we compare the rural area and the urban area group, so right now, from what I can see on social media, the urban area group of youth, they're getting more politically engaged, and they're actually channeling they actually want to channel their anger at the polls. So they're getting really, really engaged, and they want to see changes. But for the rural areas, I think that they still lack of political awareness. So I think right now what we have to do is to make sure they're aware of what's happening in the surrounding. Because for Why Politics, what we did last week was we went to the rural area and then we gave them comic books, because we did a whole series of comic books just to make politics simpler or easier for the first-time voter to understand. And then a lot of them, they don't even know who the Prime Minister is. So I think, and they might not be that keen to, you know, go all the way to vote. And I think it also depends on whether or not it's easy for them to go out and vote.
Right. That's a good point. Can I ask you, what would you like to see, what would you like to see from political parties to help remove some of these barriers and obstacles and encourage young voters to turn up at the ballot box on polling day?
Okay, I think over the years, we can see that, yes, there is an increase in the effort of building awareness, but I don't think this is sufficient, because the efforts in building political awareness are heavily centered around urban areas, especially Klang Valley area and a few major cities around Malaysia. Hence, I think individuals from rural areas, they have little to no opportunities to get involved with being politically conscious. So I think right now what we can do is political parties, they can probably go down to the rural areas and then they make sure to do what they have been doing in the urban areas. So basically just to engage more with them and then to make sure that they actually, like especially the rural areas, they know of the ideologies of the different political parties.
There's been a lot of talk, a lot of calls for political parties to field fresh faces. We're tired of seeing the same old, same old. We want a new crop, young crop of leaders. So there's been calls to field new candidates in certain constituencies. Can I ask you, if political parties were to do that, field more younger candidates in GE15, should it be taken as a given that young voters would then vote for those young candidates?
I think many young people, they're looking for a radical change in the government. So to get them to the polls, we need young and effective candidates. So this group of youths right now, they're social media savvy. And even if the candidate is young and new, every single move of the candidates would be heavily examined by them through the campaigning process. So in order for us, or political parties to win their vote, these candidates, they have to first ensure that they abstain from race and religion-based politics. These candidates have to be active on social media to listen to their issues and find a possible solution and to solve them in the case that they get elected. So I think the key is to act fast, be open-minded, and show empathy. So it's not that... It's not that the political party, you put young candidate, it means that the young will definitely vote for them.
A quick question, Carmen, can I ask you? You mentioned you hope that they will be responsive, quick to respond to these issues. What are the issues within your work? when you go down to the ground, you meet young people, what are the issues that resonate the most with them? What do they care passionately about that would motivate them to go and cast their ballot?
I think in general, regardless of their political ideologies and respective upbringings, it is clear that in terms of the election itself, youth cares about respect. So the first is for political parties to respect the democratic process by ensuring a fair election process. And it's for its issues like the bread and butter issues, the cost of living, the youth employment is another issue that would resonate with the youth, as many struggle to find jobs that suit their degree. And this will lead to many individuals being unable to pay off their education debts and carry on with their daily life, especially in the current age of rising living costs. I think the other issue might also be the access to internet. Youth these days, they are so vocal, even on social media. So with bad connection, they won't be able to voice out their concern.
All right. Carmen, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Carmen Lo, co-founder of Youth in Politics. We're going to take another very quick break here on the show. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. Hello, I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome back to Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about young voters in GE15. We're going to zoom in on university students now and the challenges that they may face in casting their ballot. We speak now to a student leader, Alif Naif Muhammad Fizam. He is a president of the Student Union for International Islamic University Malaysia. Alif, thank you for joining me on the show today. I'm hoping to start our conversation with the sentiment of your cohort about the upcoming and imminent elections. Are they excited? I'm wondering because there are a lot of people who say that young people are politically apathetic, that they don't care about politics. How would you respond to those comments?
I would say the sentiments or the feelings among my friends and my colleagues here in IIUM is quite a mixed feelings, actually. Some of us is very much excited to be part of the upcoming election, seeing because quite a number of us hasn't got any chance for the previous election. So for this, there are some students who are excited, but there are a quite number of students and quite a number of students who are quite concerned with the sudden announcement of dissolution, because as mentioned or as has been circulated around, that the concerns actually revolve on flood or monsoon season. So because we had our experience last year handling some of our affected students, so these things linger in our minds, thinking about if, let's say, the election actually coincides with a crisis, a natural disaster. So I would say feelings are mixed, but yet I don't... Right.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think that's also another dimension here. I understand the concerns about floods, but with public universities, I think just having started the new semester, many of the mahasiswa, many of the eligible voters, they're in universities, they're staying far away from their hometowns. They've just come into university for a new semester. And if we think of, historically, the period dissolution to polling day would be around 6 weeks, a month to 6 weeks, that would be smack in the middle of the semester. Do you expect that many mahasiswa will be discouraged or disadvantaged in having to make that trip back home to vote, that some may even be reluctant to even go back?
In my opinion, there will be some students who are reluctant, but I wouldn't say there are that many students because this reluctance, if we say that reluctance comes from the hustle, they have to go back to their hometown and all, on behalf of the students, there are actually student groups, IUM Student Union included, that are focusing on how to manage our friends and send them back home Actually, we are managing buses and of course some campaigns, just like what has been done during the previous election, the carpool for GE and everything. So these are, I would say, grassroots campaigns that also comes from the mahasiswa, the students. So I would say there might be reluctance, but we can ensure these reluctant students that we will try our best to send them home for them to perform their duties.
Right. Well, is that the responsibility of NGOs and CSOs? What would you like to see the government do to help facilitate? What would you like to see the Election Commission do to make it easier for people to exercise their democratic right, particularly first-time voters like university students? How can the government help ease this process?
Actually, I would like to see the government being involved, I would say being heavily involved rather than relying just on student groups or NGOs. And I would say one of the things that they can do, especially that we now see that state governments, especially is not being dissolved. Some of them agree not to be dissolved. So these state governments actually have linked with the Kelab Anak Negeri in campuses. So these state governments can actually assist in terms of resources, whether in preparing for buses or even, I would say, monetary as part of the resources, so that this Kelab Anak Negeri in every campuses in Malaysia can utilize this assistance from the government and send the students back home to vote.
Can I ask you what you would like to see happen between now, apart from what you've just mentioned, what would you like to see happen between now and polling day? What can mobilize young people? What can excite them to come out and vote?
I would say right now, what I would love to see is that students actually come together to come up with demands. As of now, demands as in we know that right now, there are no, I would say, established government yet. So they might pander to whatever demands that come from the voters, students included. So me and my friends currently is drafting some sort of a student's demands on the national level that we will try to push these politicians. And also, I would like to see discourses being made, because right now, rhetorics especially is at play. Students are not particularly entertained by rhetorics. So we would like to see manifestos being scrutinized, policies being scrutinized.
That's a good point. This is the time to put forward the demands. What's top of the list, Alif, on your demands?
So one of the top of our list is actually to have a national student union rather than a national SRC, so that our rights especially will be, I would say, not being infringed. Especially if they were to express themselves on the streets and whatnot, demonstration or protest, their rights would not be infringed, because being a national student union, it is just like a workers' union. Picketing is not something wrong for a union. So right now, we only have like two student unions, UIA, IUM and also UM. So, but we would like the government to actually come up with a national student union and also student union in every campuses that currently only have SRC or MPP.
All right. Alif, thank you for joining me on the show today. Alif Naif Mohamed Fizam, the president of the IIUM Student Union. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.